This is the story of the one. Who, as a maintenance specialist for a historic high-rise, knows that vintage charm historically needs constant attention. Which is why, when it's time to upgrade turn-of-the-century mechanicals, they turn to Grainger. With easy access to a million-plus products and the scale to deliver when and where you need them, the right tools and supplies are never far away. So the one can keep that vintage building running like new. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
BFFT. From the PAC West Center in downtown Portland, presented by High Caliber Millwrights, here's John Canzano with a bald-faced truth.
Last Friday, I was on the road traveling, and I got an email from our next guest. Rob Mullins, the athletic director at University of Oregon, sent out an email to all his stakeholders, constituents, fans, whatever you want to call the people who care about University of Oregon athletics. And he did what a lot of ADs are doing these days. He reached out to his fans and said, hey, look, times are changing. The open letter had the headline, "The Changing Landscape of College Athletics." And in the letter, Rob Mullins pointed out there's going to be revenue sharing coming. It's $20 to $23 million. And there's going to be new costs. And there's going to be, you know, there's going to be this search for additional revenue streams. And there'll also be some cost containment strategies. I got to use that sometime. I'm doing some cost containment strategies when my 10-year-old daughter asked me to buy her another pack of WNBA sports cards. No, we're doing some cost containment strategies. I got to trot that out. Well, I invited Rob Mullins to come on the show because I want you to hear from him. And I've got questions about this. I kind of want to know how athletic directors are thinking, what they're thinking about. I know you do as well. And so he was kind enough to join us, and he's popping on the show right off the top of the show. Joining us now, University of Oregon AD Rob Mullins. How are you? We are queuing up Rob Mullins now, I promise you. There he is. All right. We're in cost containment on our phone screening software. Sorry about that. How you doing?
I hope it's working for you.
It is now. How are you, man? Open letter. This, tell me what goes into this, because this isn't something you do all the time.
No, as you referenced, the subject was, you know, there's been so much change in college athletics recently. And, you know, we get the opportunity to engage with our fans, you know, not only at games, but also at different speaking engagements just out in the community. And this is a topic of conversation because they hear it on the John Canzano show. They read about it in every media outlet. It's the water cooler talk of what does this mean? What does transfer portal mean? What does NIL mean? What impact is it having, you know, on my favorite college teams? And obviously with the October preliminary approval from Judge Wilkin in the Ninth Circuit of the House settlement, there's another set of sweeping changes upon us, assuming that settlement gets final approval in April. You know, we're planning for that, and it would go into effective July 1st of 2025. So
wow.
This is all happening very, very fast, and it'll be seismic change to college athletics. And, you know, we just felt that it was important to communicate with our fan base some of the specifics, but then also, you know, how we were thinking about going about attacking this.
What are we talking about? You know, and you talk about revenue sharing and what happens on July 1 of 2025. Are you bracing for 20 to 23 million? Is that the number that's out there?
So there's two numbers. This is very complicated, but there's two numbers. You know, assuming that the settlement gets final approval in April, on July 1st of 2025, athletic departments are permitted to begin sharing revenue, and it, you know, we've heard anywhere between 20.5 million to 22 million among student athletes. And there's a lot of work to do to get ready to do that. First and foremost is you have to identify that 20.5 million. In addition to that, you know, the NCAA rules around scholarships have changed. For decades, we had scholarship limits. on July 1st, 2025, we're moving to roster limits, which will, you know, give us the opportunity, again, be permissive to offer more scholarships in most sports than we currently do if you can fund it. So that would be on top of the $20.5 million.
How do you decide what you go full throttle in with roster limits and scholarships, and maybe where you go, hey, there, you know, this is a sport we still care about, but you know, we're not getting return on our investment in this other sport, so maybe we don't go full throttle.
Yeah, that's, you know, you just hit the most difficult part of this. You know, we've been undergoing this period of deregulation in NCAA rules for about 8 years. And so we've seen things change, like, you know, the meals. There was a time, John, you'll remember, where we could offer a bagel, but we couldn't provide jelly or cream cheese. That would be a violation. And so, you know, that went away. And then we could add cost of attendance. And now we can do these Alston Academic Cash Awards. At the University of Oregon, we've been fortunate in that we have been able to provide that to all 500 of our student athletes in full. You know, we're probably at a point here where, to your question, you know, we're going to have to be much more strategic in how we do that, because we don't have unlimited resources. And, you know, it will be important for us to invest in the areas where we do generate revenue. We have one sport that makes money here that funds the other 19. So, you know, we'll need to continue to compete at the highest level in football in order to help fund those other 19 sports.
Yeah, we talk about football, and I think on most campuses that's the case, that sport is funding everything else. And you guys have done well this season in football. How much does the success of this season make maybe the what comes next? Does it make it any easier, you know, as you turn to fans and go, hey, we're going to have to raise ticket prices, or we're going to add a athlete tax, or, you know, what kinds of things are you thinking about, and does the success in football help sort of motivate and fuel that?
Yeah, I think the Autzen experience certainly helps. You know, a team that's having success certainly helps it. You know, it creates greater engagement. But, you know, we still are very thoughtful about anything that we do. Obviously, we have an incredible atmosphere at Autzen. We have an amazing fan base. And we try to be very thoughtful in any changes that we make so that we can continue to provide great value, particularly great value to the season ticket holder, and make sure that, you know, that we are being mindful of the current times, both from an economic standpoint, but also from our ability to compete at the highest level. And so, yes, a lot goes into that. But, you know, we try to land in a place that works for everybody.
Rob Mullins with us, University of Oregon Athletic Director. We've seen some real creative things that have gone on in, you know, in schools turning to their fan bases saying, hey, we're going to do QR codes, or we're going to sell sponsorships on the field. And what's on the table here as you get ready to come back to fans, you know, probably sometime before July?
Yeah, I think everything's, you know, on the table. And that's kind of, you know, what we were trying to communicate. Obviously, you know, the lifeblood of an athletic program is ticket sales and donations. And so those are always going to be extremely important. The media contracts are set. The local sponsorships, you know, are somewhat set. So, you know, but we are going to look at things differently. You referenced field logos, maybe even jersey patches, you know, where there's opportunities that we've been, you know, somewhat hesitant to do in the past. We will now look to, because, you know, as we see college athletics change, to remain at the highest level, you're going to need to be able to generate this $20.5 million to get to the full cap. And we've seen the impact of NIL, and, you know, this cap is going to play a similar role. You know, we have great facilities. We have outstanding people. We have, you know, maybe the best coaching group in all of the country. But this NIL piece is another piece that goes into the formula for student-athletes' decision-making.
Yeah, it's so you know, complicated and so much different. And Dylan Gabriel was on the show just a couple weeks ago, and I sort of asked him, and I felt stupid after. I said, you know, the simplicity of college athletics, you know, are you really kind of, you know, immersing yourself in that before you go off to the professional ranks in the NFL? And he said, he paused and he said, I don't know how to tell you this, but this is the pros now. And it was just, you know, it was like, oh yeah, it is the pros. How are you doing with all of that? Because you came up in a system that wasn't professional, and now it very much does look like, you know, professional sports in some form.
Yeah, there certainly is a segment of it that feels that way. Obviously, Dylan's a very bright and mature young man, and you know he's seen it change in his time. So, yeah, he's right. What I'll say this is, you know, we have 500 student-athletes, so there is a small segment that it does feel that way. But there's a large majority where it still has that collegiate feel. So, you know, again, our mission and our goals remain the same, right? And that is to provide an exceptional student athlete experience with a set of support around every single student athlete to attack it academically, to have a great social experience and achieve whatever goal they have for themselves on the field. And then give our teams a chance to compete for championships. And now part of that is that the student athletes, rightfully so, have an opportunity to take full advantage of their name, image, likeness, and the passion that's generated around college athletics.
Are you, like, enjoying this season? You're undefeated. You're number one. And yet, amid all that, you know, the world, the sands are shifting beneath your feet. I have to think that it's a mixed bag for you because you can't afford really to kind of take a victory lap right now.
No, I mean, obviously, I'm really excited for the coaches and team and our fans because, you know, the energy in and around Autzen has been phenomenal. And the falls just fly by. But you're right. At the same time, you know, we have so many things coming at us that we have to adapt to before July 1. You know, can we raise $20.5 million? How do we allocate that $20.5 million? What's the execution process to put that into effect in recruiting, in retention, in the portal? In addition, there's so much change happening at the NCAA level through this deregulation and time of change. You know, what's the clearinghouse going to look like? What's the new enforcement process around this going to look like? So, yes, we're spending a lot of days planning for what's about to take place on July 1st because it came really fast from a standpoint of executing all these details. But, you know, at the end of the day, you know, we still do have the opportunity to come help young people achieve their dreams and have a phenomenal experience. And that there is great enjoyment in that.
When I saw your email, I was very curious how it would be received by your fan base, because I think for years the perception has been that Oregon's self-sufficient. Oregon's got Phil Knight as a booster. That's such an advantage. You know, Phil will have this, like he'll have you covered. Like, you know, I think a lot of schools really worried about can they get to 20.5 million. And I think Oregon fans may a little bit take it for granted that Phil Knight has been there and helped and other donors have been there and helped. And how do you fight that perception with the fan base?
We're very fortunate. Mr. and Mrs. Knight have been extremely generous. I mean, you know, our facility infrastructure is phenomenal. Our support is phenomenal. And numerous other donors have helped build that brand, build that infrastructure. And we've also seen that happen at the beginning of the NIL era. You know, obviously we were on the front end of that and there have been some great returns from that standpoint, but this is going to take broader support. There's no doubt. Mr. and Mrs. Knight will continue to be generous, as will so many other donors who've helped build Oregon athletics to the place that we are today. But in this new frontier, you know, everybody's going to need to increase that reach, and we're no different.
And I think you did a smart thing getting out and writing the letter. We've seen a number of other ADs do similar things where they're basically saying, signaling to the fan base, hey, you know, we're going to have to stretch here, and we're going to have to ask things of fans that we didn't ask before. I think given the success on the field, should fans expect a raise in season ticket prices? Should they expect some kind of athlete tax like Tennessee is doing? Have you sorted any of that out yet?
So we have started to sort that out. We will be increasing season tickets. You know, we're finalizing that again. We want to be very thoughtful about it. Our intention is always to provide great value. And again, value to the season ticket holder. Because if you were to look at this year, John, you know, the season ticket value was, you know, tremendous when you compare it to single game prices and then an incredible value when you look at what was happening on the secondary market for some of our games. So we will continue to do that for our fans. But yes, we will, like everybody, be increasing season ticket prices.
Have you looked at a tax, the athlete tax? Like, you know, I kind of wonder about that. And, you know, some are going to do it. I think some won't. Do you have a position on that?
Yeah, we have seen others do that. That is not in our current plans. Again, you know, and I don't think you'll see that for 25, 26 from us. Mm-hmm. We're going to explore a lot of other methods, you know, season tickets, other creative sponsorship opportunities. You know, where can we, we're a pretty lean operation, administratively as it is, but, you know, we'll still make sure that we're being efficient with every dollar that we have. So, you know, I don't think that we're going to look at something like a talent fee. Mm-hmm. We're going to stick to kind of the more traditional methods.
This football season and Dan Lanning, you know, it's amazing to me to watch the weekly release of the committee rankings. You were on that committee. You were the chair of the committee. You know, can you take us a little bit inside what that process is like and what those committee members might be going through with a 12-team playoff versus the 4-team playoff and how intensive that was for you?
Yeah, it was extremely intense. And it was, you know, it was a professional highlight to have the opportunity to work with 12 other dedicated professionals on such an important task of what the CFP is doing. I think the piece that sometimes gets lost when you just watch the reveal of a top 25 is how much work goes into it. You know, all 13 members are watching every game. They have access to every stat and data point imaginable, and they're taking deep dives on all of that. And when you get in the room, you're not just going 1 to 25. They break it down into smaller chunks. So when I was on the committee, and I assume it's still the same, I haven't confirmed this, but you would start out with a group of six teams based on how everybody did their rankings, and you would debate those six teams for the top three. So you start out with six to rank three, then you have another group of six to rank four through six. So you take a super deep dive and do a lot of comparison amongst a small group before you start ranking.
There's, you know, there are teams that, you know, Texas and Georgia are a great example. You know, Georgia beat Texas, but Georgia's has multiple losses, and so Georgia's below Texas in the rankings. What are those conversations like when you get to, hey, head-to-head, these two teams played, and one's better than the other, but you have to put a team that, I guess, is having a better season on paper in front of the other?
Yeah, it's complicated. I mean, you know, you are fortunate when you do have a head-to-head, but sometimes the head-to-heads can create conflicts.
Right.
You know, even tougher part is when you have teams that have two resumes that look similar, but they don't have common opponents and they don't have head-to-heads, because then you're having to really deep dive into the numbers and use some judgment. So yeah, there, you know, fortunately, you know, each week there becomes another data point. And the great thing about the committee is they start with a clean sheet every week. And, you know, unlike some of the other voting polls, they don't necessarily just get caught up in the number of wins and losses. They are truly looking at the resumes. So that's where you will see teams that might have more losses than another team ranked ahead. And I think the blank sheet, start over and don't just move people up and down based on the most recent week's result, is extremely important.
I am really curious to see how does, you know, the five seed and the path that the five seed ends up with differ from maybe one of the top four seeds, or what those matchups look like, or maybe a team that doesn't play in a conference championship game versus, you know, the loser of the conference championship game, how that path differs. What are you curious about with this 12-team playoff as an AD?
Yeah, you hit on two great ones. I'm, you know, because obviously, you know, the four highest ranked conference champions get the top four seeds in the bye. So that fifth seed is going to be extremely interesting. I think it's also going to be interesting to see, you know, the home teams, right? You know, the four first round games are at home hosted sites. And as you said, how do the teams that lose the conference champ games get treated? You know, those are all things that have existed before, but now when you add it to 12, it, you know, it's more complex.
I'm going to just pepper you with a series of questions people are asking me. You know, are any sports in jeopardy of being cut as a result of kind of the new reality?
So, I mean, at University of Oregon, that is, I mean, we're fortunate that, you know, we're right-sized at 20 sports and 500 student-athletes. That is not on the table for us today. But, you know, obviously we're still learning about this. You know, what is on the table is, you know, as I mentioned, from 2014 to 2024, every time there was a piece of deregulation, we were able to implement it for all 500 student athletes. That will not be the case in this, just because of the size of the added expense line item. So, you know, we do not anticipate cutting any sports, but we do anticipate having to make some really difficult resource allocation decisions.
All right. And is that, are we talking about scholarships as you say that? Or
just, some of that will be scholarships. Some of it may be, you know, travel. I mean, obviously, we're going to provide, you know, meals, mental health support, medical support, academic support across the board. So it'll more operational things. Yes, some of that will be scholarships, mostly.
You know, one thing I was thinking about is, you know, there, I think, will be some schools that say, hey, we're not going to fund maybe some of the Olympic sports on the men's side because we need to stay Title IX compliant. And I worry about the Olympic programs and the development programs across the country, not just with Oregon, but there are a number of schools that feed the United States Olympic team. Do you worry about that as a casualty of this?
100%. And I have referenced that many times. I've had the chance to serve on some committees for the USOPC. And I do think that there will be an impact on men's Olympic sports specifically. There could be greater investment in women's Olympic sports as far as scholarship opportunities go through this, as you said, to, you know, because we all need to comply with Title IX. But I do think that at some places, you know, that will impact men's Olympic sports. And, you know, the numbers are staggering on how many collegiate athletes or former collegiate athletes make up Team USA.
Yeah, and I just sort of look at that and I go, gosh, is that going to be a casualty? The success of your football program has my phone ringing because people call me and say, hey, would Dan Lanning leave Oregon for the NFL? How do you handle that as an AD? Because you extended him, I think, last year. Or 2 summers ago, and he, I believe, wants those kids to go to the same high school and stay. So I don't think you're in jeopardy of another college coming at you. But what do you do when you see ESPN reporting every other week, oh, there's an NFL job out there, or is that just part of the business?
Well, I mean, it means that we have a great coach and that the program's having success first and foremost. But as you've documented several times, you know, Dan has made a huge commitment to this community. Dan, Sophia, love being a part of this community. With our 10th win last week, he had an automatic extension to take him back to 6 years on his contract. We're going to continue to support and invest in Dan. He's a great coach. And the private conversations that I have with Dan are the same ones that you have with Dan, and that is, you know, he's all in at the University of Oregon, loves the community, and he's focused on, you know, delivering for these fans, these student athletes, every single day.
Rob Mullins, I appreciate you giving us some of your time and talking to, you know, your fan base as well. But, you know, how soon should people expect to see some kind of ask, or is this just going to be, hey, kind of part and parcel with season tickets? Don't be surprised if there's increases.
Yeah, no, we'll stay on our season ticket renewal timeline. So, you know, we typically get that out near the end of the season. So our season ticket renewal, we will be going out with the increase in it here in the coming weeks. And we're going to keep on the same timeline.
All right. I appreciate you joining us, giving us some of your time. Thank you for that. And I will see you at the stadium shortly.
Awesome. Yeah.
All right.
Thanks, John.
Take care. There he goes. Rob Mullins, Oregon AD. Just a lot to unpack there. As you sort of look at what Oregon is up against, you know, I think fans should brace for an increase to their season ticket packages. I think you should expect to see that Oregon is going to try to wring sponsorship dollars. He mentioned ticket sales, sponsorship dollars. And then on the cost-cutting side, I think it's going to be sports on the men's side that and scholarships that mostly get you know, cannibalized by this $20.5 million figure that Oregon and everybody else that wants to fully fund has to come up with. It'll be interesting to see, too, how many schools say, we can't do it. You know, hey, we can get close, but we can't get to $20.5 million. And it puts you at a competitive disadvantage. I can tell you this, though. Everybody's going to try to go full throttle in football. And you hear Rob Mullins say, hey, we have one sport that makes money, and 19 that don't. I mean, it would be insane if you ran any kind of business and you said, hey, we have 20 locations and 19 of them are losing money. Let's just pour all equal resources into all of them. No, you wouldn't do that. And so I think all of these athletic departments are going to go full throttle into football and then see what else is there and try to save money, particularly on the men's side. And as you heard Rob Mullins, the men's Olympic side, it could be devastating for the United States Olympic team. I want your reaction to that. 503-417-7575. What crossed your mind as Rob Mullins was talking about the new realities in this changing landscape of sports? You got the bald-faced truth statewide.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.